Morning. Today's daf in Menachos Samachay. We are on Samach Dalam and Beis. We're starting today at the Mishnah. We are talking about the Mitzvah Zomer, sixth parak of Menachos. In the sixth parak of Menachos, we detail from beginning to end the entire process of the Minchas HaOmer. Minchas HaOmer is barley offering that's offered on the second day of Pesach, on the 16th day of Nisan. The mitzvah in the Torah to offer the Omer, so it is an interesting mitzvah, replete with a lot of details and a lot of history as well. So today we talk some details, and today we talk a lot of history. How much is the Omer? How much flour is the Omer? So that's our first sugya that we already covered. So that the yield is an isaron. We need an isaron of sifted flour, and that's coming either from 3 or 5 sa'ah of barley, of whole barley. So that we already discussed in the previous Mishnah. We also got a hint in the first Mishnah in terms of the history, because the Mishnah says that when we go out, so we generally go out with 3 kohanim, 3 sickles, 3 baskets, and we collect it with a little bit of publicity. In fact, we're going to be learning today a lot of publicity. So the reason why we do so is because the Baitusim disagreed with us, the traditionalists, in terms of when exactly the Omer is to be brought. And that much more of that detail is coming up later on in this morning's daf. So I'll reserve that for a little bit later on. So we already saw the first Mishnah, Machlokis, in terms of whether there's a distinction between Shabbos and a weekday. A Machlokis in terms of how much barley should we start with. A Machlokis whether or not we're going to go out with 3 Kohanim or 1 Kohen. So see again the first Mishnah, the first Sugya, for a discussion of that topic. In our Mishnah now on Samach Ramad Beis, so we're talking about now where we're going to get it from, locationally, where we're going to get it from. And the answer really is simple, meaning the closest place we can get to from Yerushalayim, meaning the first field outside of the Beis Mikdash proper, where they're growing barley, so that's where we're going to go. And the Mishnah speaks it out. Let's begin the Mishnah. Mitzvah.
Whose field?
Well, it's going to be purchased with public money. It's a public carbon. So I'm not sure if it matters whose field it is. Whoever field it is going to be, it's going to be purchased with public money. So the mitzvah min hamufcher says the Mishnah is to bring it from the most proximate place you can. And let's say lo biker akarv liyushalayim. Let's say it's growing proximate to Yerushalayim, but it's not fully ripened. The word biker means fully ripened. So mivino so mikom makom. So then you bring it from any place. Now any place, by the way, means Eretz Yisrael, meaning it has to come from Eretz Yisrael. We touched on that earlier in the Masechta. We're going to touch on that later as well. But in other words, it's mitzvah min hamufcha to bring it from anywhere which is closest to Yerushalayim. Ma'aseh shebaa omer migal gatzrifin nishalach mibikas ein socher. And the Mishnah over here tells us that once upon a time, and we'll talk more about when that time was, but once upon a time we brought the omer, the barley for the omer from gal gatzrifin. So geographically, I don't know where that is, but I do know this from the context of the Mishnah. It's not close. And the shealachim that's brought in Shavuos, so the wheat that was brought for the shealachim came from Ein Socher. Once again, I'll repeat. I don't know where that is, but contextually in the Mishnah, I do know it's far away from Yerushalayim. So the Gemara starts off my time. How do I know, or from where does the source that it has to come from somewhere which is proximate? So Ibai Zem Mishim Karmel. So the Gemara is going to give 2 svaras. One is because of the Pasuk in the Torah. Pasuk in the Torah, when describing the barley, so it describes it as Karmel. Karmel, says Rashi, is a contraction. Take a look at the first Rashi, second Rashi on the Gemara. Rashi writes, Takriv Rach Umale. So it's got to be soft, it's got to be full. And Rashi continues, Shetei Atua Rakav Nimlelas Biyad. It's got to be so soft that you can basically roll it in your hand. V'maisi Merachok Nashiv Lazika. And if you bring it from far away, says Rashi, so wind is going to blow, and it's umiskasha b'derech, and it's going to get stale along the way. So basically, freshness. So that's answer number one. Answer number two of the Gemara, also a general concept that's true regarding all mitzvos, and that is that you can't go past a mitzvah. In other words, a mitzvah opportunity, first time it comes around, take advantage of it, and be a zaris, be someone who has alacrity. Rashi over here, again, in Hilkach, kishiyotzi mishon levakish omer. So Rashi says, look, here's the starting point. The Kohanim are in Yerushalayim, and now they're leaving Yerushalayim to go fetch the omer. So oso shemotzi rishon notel. So the first feel they encounter, that's the one they should take from De'ein Mavirin Ala Mitzvos, because of this principle of Ein Mavirin. Maisa Shaba Omer Migal Gotzrifin, back to the Gemara. The Gemara now is going to quote a Brisa, Tanur Rabbanan. Kishiratzu Machay Beis Chashmanai, I'm sorry. Kishitzaru, right, important correction. Kishitzaru Machay Beis Chashmanai Ze Al Ze, So the civil war started amongst the family of Chashmonai. So we're probably all familiar with the history of Hanukkah. So Hanukkah is was such an important part of our history that the Chachamim transformed it into a mitzvah, mitzvah tamidus. So the commemoration of the history of Hanukkah, so it turned into a mitzvah derabbanan of Ner. But that was in the middle of Bayit Sheni. Okay? Bayit Sheni lasted for 420 years. Again, you know, we've gone over this numerous times. We say 420 years. Secular says something closer to 500, over 500 years, 580 years, whatever the case is. Okay, but anyway, the Bayit Sheni lasted for at least four centuries, if not more. But in any event, right around the midpoint of Bayit Sheni, so the Greeks took a position. We defeated the Greeks, and that was great. Now the head of this revolution, of this rebellion against the Greeks, was by the Chashmonai family. They were Kohanim. So what they did was great. On the other hand, says Ramban in Chumash in Parshas Vayechi. On the other hand, what they also did is they took over the monarchy as well. So the Ramban says they shouldn't have done so, but they did so. So you have now a monarchy led by the family of Chashmonaim, and they went for numerous generations. So at one point in time now, there was two brothers who both felt that they were the heir apparent to the throne. We're going to be introduced to them in just a moment, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. And so these two brothers who were later in the generations of the Chashmonaim, they were the sons, if I'm not mistaken, you can check me up on this, but they were the sons of one of the Yanais, Alexander Yanai. Okay, good, thank you. So they were the sons of Alexander Yanai, and they had and they fought over the throne. The fighting got so bad that eventually one of them ended up employing the services of the Romans in order to help his side of the cause, and so began the Roman conquest of Israel. Anyway, with all that stated over here, we're just getting like a small snippet of this little history. And right now, one of the brothers is inside Yerushalayim, one of the brothers is outside Yerushalayim. We have in our Gemara one version of who was inside, one who was outside. Various sources debate exactly which one was in, which one was out, irregardless, irrespective. And so we had a hard time now with the basics of operating the Beis HaMikdash, meaning even just getting an animal for the Karban Tamid. That was an issue because there was a siege laid outside of Yerushalayim. And so here we go now with a braisa pointing to this period of history. So I'll start again. Kishitzar mache beis chashmonai zalzev, ayu hurkanus mebechutz, varistablus mebefnim. So our version has it, the hurkanus was on the outside, aristablus was on the inside. Bechol yom v'yom, hayim ishashlam dinarim bekupa. So what they would do was they would drop dinarim in a basket so that basically they could buy the carbon tumid. Umalam tamidim. And every day, so money was basically lowered over the wall, and then the animal was raised into the wall so that we would have a carbon tamid. Hayusham zaken echad. Now inside, we had somebody who was literally and figuratively an insider, meaning so he was inside the wall, but really he was an operative. He basically worked for the outside party. In this case, in our version, Hyrcanus. Shayamaki b'chachmas yavanis. Now he also know how to speak code. Okay, Chachmas Yavanis. We normally translate that as Greek knowledge. Basically, it was a communication system in which they signed to one another. They were able to communicate and right under the radar. So Lazlam b'Chachmas Yavanis, and this is what he communicated to the people outside. Amalem Kozman Shasukim Bavoda Inim Sern Biyedchem. You know, this is the secret of the Jewish people. They're bringing the Karban Tamid. You're not going to be able to defeat here us inside unless you stop. Unless you stop the importation of the carbon tamid, lamachar shishalam dinarim bekupa. So the next day, so the dinarim were dropped in the bucket as per every day. Vehelulam chazir, and so now they replaced the normal carbon tamid, obviously which was a kosher animal, and they replaced it with a chazir. And kevishigila chazir choma natsi parnav bechoma. And so now, as the chazir was being scaled up the wall, lifted up the wall. So it stuck its fingers into the wall, and his dazda Eretz Yisrael arba meas parsal arba meas parsa, and Eretz Yisrael shook with just the idea that a chazir was going to be offered on the Beis Hamikdash. But also Shah Amru, Now, at that point in time, there were a number of injunctions that were made. One, Arushi Gadol Chazir, a ban on raising animals, raising pig, I should say, in Eretz Yisrael. Two, Arushi Lamei Beno Chachmas Yevanis, a second ban on teaching Chachmas Yevanis to your children. And three, Aloso Shah Shaninu Maiser Shabbat, Omer Migagot Srifim V'Sheachem Mibikas Ein Socher. And it was that year where we weren't able to get any of the grains close to Yerushalayim. Meaning, if we could just picture, there was a siege later on Yerushalayim. And so with the siege later on Yerushalayim, so probably they also destroyed the fields that were around Yerushalayim. That's generally what happens in a siege. And so they were not able to get any of the grains that were close to Yerushalayim. So where did they go? So Kimata Omer Lohavi Yada Mehecha. So I see Omer. So they didn't know where to get the Omer from. So Ichrazu. So they made an announcement basically saying, can anyone please help? Also, Harasha. So here comes a mute. A mute is somebody who can hear but who cannot speak. Right? Cheresh generally means that he can't do either. But you'll see in this case, clearly he had a means of communication. He was not a cheresh in the classic sense of eno medaber ve'eno shomea. He was just simply an eno medaber. He was not unable to speak. Osif chadiyada igra v'chadiyada atzrifa. And now he's trying to tell the Beis HaMikdash, the operators of the Beis HaMikdash, where exactly we could find grain. So we're now holding by the Omer, so where can we find barley? And so his inability to speak, so now the game of charades. So he takes one hand and he puts it on a rooftop, he takes another hand, he puts it on a hut, and Amalhu Mordechai. So there's Mordechai right there, and now he's deciphering, he's decoding the message, the charaded message from the mute. Which Mordechai is this? Really interesting. Rashi writes that this is Mordechai from the time of Ahasuerus. It's hard to hear that. I'm not making this point. Tosfos is making this point. It's hard to hear that. This is hundreds of years later, after the Mordechai lived between Bais Rishon and Bais Sheni. We are now more than halfway through Bais Sheni. So it is hard to hear that it's Mordechai. Tosfos on the very bottom, second to last Tosfos. Perish Bekunshus to have a Mordechai, Shai Bemechashosh Vetema, Hulamar Sheherich Yamim Kolkach. It's unusual for people to live that long, obviously in the earlier generations. So people live that long, but by Sheni, people did not live that long. V'nir al Shem Mordechai harishon hayu nikraim hamamunim al shmo lefisha einam amanim ela bikiim balei seichel umada. So Tosfos writes that probably what the pshat is that anyone who took that position also took on the name of Mordechai. Good. So Mordechai over here is now going to decipher what the message was. Mika duchta deshma gagos trifan o trifan gagos. So understanding how, by placing a hand on a roof and a hand on it and a hut, so he just took the two words, he combined them together, not knowing about this location, never hearing about the town, but at least he knew the name of the town. So is there a town either called Gagos Srifon, Srifon Gagos? He didn't know, which word came first. Bat Kavash Kechua, and they found it. Good. So Kibay Lasu Shtei Alechem. So now, 50 days later, so it's time to bring the Shtei Alechem. Lo Haviyadam Eicha La'asuye. So they didn't know from where it should be coming from. Achrazu, so once again, another announcement. Can anyone please help? Also, Ugavra, Charasha, and once again, the mute comes. Osev Yada, Aina V'chad Yada, Sechra. He takes one hand, he puts it on his eye, takes another hand, and places it on a hole in the doorpost. And Amarlu, Mordechai, Umi, Kaduchta, Deshama, Ein Socher, Socher, Ayin. And once again, Mordechai is there to decipher the game of charade. And so he says, look, I know the words. One's the word is Zion, the other is Socher, any such place. Batkuva Ashkechu, once again, they checked it out, and it checks. They found it. And they found the wheat. Hanushol Shnashim, now that's really it. Meaning that the Adkan, that's the part of the Braisa that really deals with our discussion of when historically can we pinpoint our Mishnah. So again, our Mishnah made a veiled allusion to this period in history where they had to get the Omer from Gagot Srifim. And then, basically, now, based on the Gemara, based on the Braisa, we just went together, now we know a little bit more of the history. As long as we're here, the Gemara is going to point out other episodes that describe in detail like how good a decoder Mordechai was. Hanu shalosh nashim, right, little correct grammar, da'aisu shalosh kinim. So three women brought three pairs of birds. Now, generally speaking, when a woman comes to the Beis HaMikdash with a pair of birds, so one's going to be a chatzos and one's going to be an ola. Consider that if she just gave birth, or not just, but in other words, either 40 or 80 days earlier, So at the conclusion of her Yemei Tahara, so she's going to bring a pair of birds, once for a chatas, once for an ola. Also, if she was a Zava Gedola, so having concluded her Shiva Nekiyim, and on the eighth day she's going to bring a pair of birds, one's a chatas, one's an ola. So now, as these women are coming to the base of Mikdash with a pair of birds, so the likelihood is one bird's going to be a chatas, one's going to be an ola. And then the woman go on and give a very brief description of why they're bringing the birds. There are three of them. Chada Amr Lizivasi. So one says it's the Lizivasi. So the simplest understanding is that that's because she was a Zava, and so these birds now are for the conclusion of a Zava. Chada Amr Liyamasi. And one says Liyamasi. Now, literally it means her ocean, but again, it could be a reference to the fact that she just finished having a Ziva. And so this is now for her Zava Gedola. She counted Shiv Nakim, and she now is on the eighth day. V'chadar Amar L'onasi. And the other one says, this is my time, which again could be understood as she counted the Shiv Nakim, and now it's the eighth day. So Savar Minal Zivasi Zava Mamash, Yamasi Yamasi Mamash, L'onasi L'onasa. So Dekulu Chadachatus V'chadar Ola. So everybody there who are hearing her stories, their stories, basically understood it the way I just explained it. Good. And so they thought that now one bird is a chatas, one bird is an ola. So now in six birds in total, three of them will be chatas, three of them will be ola. Amlu Mordechai, but along comes Mordechai and says, no, you misunderstood. It could be Shema Bezov Sichna. Maybe the first woman who's giving her pair of birds, maybe she was bleeding, but in other words, not Zava bleeding, but just simply she was bleeding and she was bleeding too much. And she really feared for her life. And so what happened is miraculously she recovered. And she's bringing a pair of birds to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for her recovery. But in other words, it's not chatas ola, they're just simply a pair of birds as hodah. Okay, why not the carbon toda? Well, I don't know. But okay. Anyway, Shema B'yam Sichna, the second woman, who served, maybe she said Yamasi, maybe she was in the ocean. And again, perhaps coming close to death, and now survived, and now bringing a pair of birds, but they're both olas. And Shema Be'ina Sichna, and maybe the third one, who talked about Onasi, maybe something happened with her eye, and as a result of that, once again, she was near death, survived, and bringing a pair of birds as a way of thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Dekulu Olos Ninu. But in other words, Mordechai now is suggesting that all these birds are carbon olam. Baduk V'ashkach V'hainu Ditnan. They did an examination, meaning they just asked the women just a couple more questions, and it found out that, yep, he's absolutely right. His understanding was the correct understanding. V'hainu did not. And the Gemara says, now we can go to a Mishnah and Shkalim as we turn to the top of Samachem at Aleph, and now we'll have good understanding of the Mishnah and Shkalim. It says, P'sachya alakinem ze Mordechai. So the Mishnah over there is describing who is in charge of which one of the shofars. There are 13 shofars altogether in the base of Mikdash. Shofar over here, meaning a pushka, shaped like a shofar, that's why it was called a shofar, and so people would be depositing money. Many of those shofars were for Ketz HaMizbeach, but many of them also were earmarked for specific purposes. And the Psachia was in charge of Kinim, and that this Psachia, who was in charge of the Kinim, meaning the Pushka that was in charge of the birds, so his name was Mordechai, Lama Nikra Shmo Psachia, and an interesting name that Mordechai received, why was he called Psachia? Sheposech Tvarim V'dorshim V'yodea B'shivim Lashon. Because he was able to interpret people and understand what people meant and spoke 70 languages. The Gemara says, okay, speaking 70 languages, that's not impressive. Now, don't get me wrong. That's really impressive. Okay? I speak one, okay, and two, somewhat. So but in other words, 70 obviously is a lot to speak about. But in other words, to be a member of Sanhedrin, that's not impressive. That is standard fare for a member of Sanhedrin. So, Lashon Kulu Sanhedrin, Namiyadei Shivim Lashon. So what are you talking about? And right, they all spoke 70 languages as members of Sanhedrin. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Here we take us back to Sanhedrin. Ein moshivim Sanhedrin ele bale chachma. To become eligible, to become a member of the Sanhedrin Agadol, you have to be someone who is wise, bale mare. You have to be someone of appearance, bale komi. You have to be someone who of height, bale zikna. You have to be someone who is older, bale kshafim. And you have to know sorcery. You want to talk about an interesting Rashi. You would have asked me, why do they have to know about sorcery? So I would have quoted the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Not only would I have done it, Tosfos here does it as well. We would have gone to the Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about the fact that if there's any time that there needs to adjudicate a case involving sorcery, so the members of Sanhedrin have to know. In other words, if we're going to put somebody to death for practicing sorcery, they have to know how sorcery works. So I would have said that the reason why they have to know source three is because they're going to try somebody for practicing sorcery. Good. That's what I would have said. Tosu says that. Rashi over here writes, I'll read it. Balik shafim, shim yehe anidon mechashef. So let's say, for example, that the person who is subject to the capital punishment, so he himself happens to be a sorcerer, va'or lo yishlabo, and we're trying to kill him, but we can't simply because he's practicing his sorcery. So yasu hein machshefos va'yimisu b'chomisa shiyuchlo. So they, the members of Sanhedrin, are going to counter with their own sorcery and then put him to death through sorcery. Because we know the halacha is that somebody who's subject to capital punishment, so obviously there's a prescribed way in which we're supposed to put him to death, but the Gemara tells us a number of places, including Sanhedrin, that you put him to if you can't put him to death in the preferred method, meaning in the way the Torah spells it out, you put him to death any which manner, including, now we'll add for today, sorcery. Talk about an interesting Rashi. It's height. So Rashi comments on that. Rashi says Yirsusu mehem bali dinim v'lo yishakru. So to be imposing figures, so people won't lie to them, so the litigants won't lie to them. Continuing in the Gemara, v'yodim shivan lashon shalote sanhedrin shamas mi bi torgaman, and also they have to be knowledgeable in all 70 languages, so that whenever they hear somebody testimony, the litigants themselves, so they can hear directly. They do not hear it in through a translator, because very often it gets lost in translation. So the Gemara says, fine. So what makes Mordechai so special? The Gemara says, Ela dahave bayal lishne vidarish. Meaning the unique quality of Mordechai is not just that he was able to speak 70 languages, but his power of interpretation. Taking words, understanding how one word can connect to another word, and his ability to decode, so that is unprecedented. V'hainu dichsiv Mordechai Balshan. One place in Tanakh you're going to see he's actually described as Mordechai Balshan, which, by the way, this even though Rashi's Pshat is difficult earlier, but this certainly lends credence to Rashi's Pshat, that we're talking about the Mordechai, because that's the Pasuk in Nehemiah who's describing Mordechai. So describing him as Mordechai HaBalshan. Good. Anyway, good. That sugya we're on Samachem and Aleph. We're starting now with the Mishnah. Ketzad hein osin. So here now we get a very detailed description of the actual procedure of cutting the omer. We're harvesting the omer. Now, as we already described, the harvesting of the omer is actually done on the 16th day of Nisan. The night prior to the day, meaning the days when we're going to be bringing the carbon omer, and the night prior is when we're going out to the fields and we're going to be harvesting the grain, harvesting the barley. So ketzad hein osin, shluchei basin yotzi me'erev yamtav. So already the shluchei basin are going out May Erev Yomtov, the Osen of So Krichos Bemechuber Lakarka, Kedeshi Noch Lixer. So what they would be doing on Erev Yomtov. So let's go back just a couple of days. Meaning we're not Yomtov, we're not Chol HaMoed, we're pre Yomtov, right? Erev Pesach. So Erev Pesach, I know most people are going to be getting ready for offering the Karban Pesach, but Shluchei Basin, so they have another job that Erev Pesach, and that is, they're going to go out to the field and they're going to earmark. And I mean that as almost literally as I can, earmark. In other words, basically go to the field where the barley is growing and go out to the stalks and not cut them, because that's going to be happening on Motzei Yontif, but basically tying them so that now they are all going to be bundled together so that come Motzei Yontif, they're going to be easier to harvest. Kol ha'ayaros ha'smuch l'sham miskansos l'sham. All the cities that are close there are going to gather there. Kedeshiye nitza be'esa gadol. We want the harvesting and we want it to be a big production. We want a lot of people there. Kemeshe hichshicha omer lahem. Now we are on Motzei Yontif. And so it's the first evening of Chol HaMoed, right? The eve of the 16th. We have a lot of people surrounding. And Omer Lehem Ba'a Shemesh. And so there's going to be a lot of Q&A. And the Q&A over here are just for purposes of production. Meaning we want this to be a production. In fact, if you look at Rashi, look at the end of the Rashi on the Mishnah. Right, the last Rashi. L'fichach ha-kotzrim magbiin kolan, kidei sheishmu baitusim lotzi miliban. Well, we're going to get to the baitusim in just a moment, but Rashi over here talks about this Q&A. It's not just a... it's not just like I'm asking a question, I need an answer, but this was a formality. In other words, it was a production. They wanted people to hear the questions, people to hear the answers. And really what they want is the Baitusim to hear it. Now, the Baitusim may or may not have been there. That's not the point. Point is that it's going to get to the Baitusim, right? These questions and these answers. And we're going to go over why we want the Baitusim to hear them in just a moment. But let's just finish up the Mishnah. Amar lan ba'ashemesh amrehin ba'ashemesh. Amar lan ba'ashemesh amrehin ba'ashemesh amrehin. And so the question is going to be asked, the answer is going to be given, and we're going to repeat. And as we're going to learn in just a moment, the Q&A are going to be repeated three times over. Magal zu, should we use this sickle? Amrehin, they said, yeah, that sickle. Magal zu, this sickle? Amrehin, they said, yep, that sickle. By the way, in the Mishnah, we have the word omer, so the Shita corrects it. It should say omrim, because they are going to respond, meaning in this production, so the Shluchei Beisar asked the question, and they, all the onlookers are going to be giving an answer. It was a rally. Kupa zu amar hin. Kupa zu amar hin. And this basket, they said, yeah. And repeat. Bishabbos amar lehem Shabbos zu. Now, if it happened to be on Shabbos, which is a possibility, we've already discussed it in the first Mishnah, that it could very well be that the harvesting of the omer, the 16th day of Nisan, is going to come out on a Shabbos. And yes, that means that Pesach will fall out on a Friday. And again, I've made this point already twice. Third time, it's okay. So yes, now with a fixed calendar, so Pesach will not come out on a Friday. But back in the day, so Pesach fell out on a Friday, the omer fell out on a Shabbos. So Shabbos zu amar hin, Shabbos zu amar hin. This Shabbos, yeah. This Shabbos, yes. Exor vehem omrim lo kitzur. Should we harvest? They know what the right answer is. Yes, harvest. Exor vehem omrim lo kitzur. Shalosh panim al kol davar vedavar. Vehem omrim lo hin hin hin. Three times over for every question with a repeated answer of yes, yes, yes. Kol kach lama, and obviously now we are. The question is obvious. What's with all this production? And so the Mishnah gives us just one short line. It's because of the Baitusim. The Baitusim felt that the only time to do Ketziras HaOmer is only on Motzei Yantav, meaning that they felt that the Omer should only be brought on a Sunday, irrespective of when Pesach actually fell out, irrespective of when the 16th of Nisan fell out on. Okay. Okay, and so we've gone over this before, but let's say this again. Baitusim and Tzedukim were two sectarian groups that started I'd say in the middle, but really closer to the beginning of Bais Sheni, right? We've touched on this before. So one of the first of the Balei Masorah during the during Bais Sheni is Antignus Ish Sochel. You'll find him in the beginning of Pirkei Avos. In the third mission of the first parak, so he made a statement. Well, let's take the short version right now. He made a statement. The students misunderstood him. Two of his students were Tzadok and Baitos, and so with a misunderstanding of the Rebbe, so each one of them started sectarian groups, right? Chutz l'machane, and basically the common denominator between the Tzedukim and the Baitusim and is a rejection of Torah Shebaal Peh. So Torah Shebichsav, for the most part, they kept, but Torah Shebaal Peh they rejected. Now, with the rejection of Torah Shebaal Peh, so the Omer now becomes a real sticking point. Because the Torah in describing when the Omer is brought, so the Torah uses the expression, Mimacharas HaShabbos, the day after Shabbos. So without a Torah Shebaal Peh, so one can conceive that that means that when should the Omer be brought? Sunday. As the Torah says, Mimacharas HaShabbos. Meaning whichever Shabbos falls after Pesach, the first day of Pesach, so that Sunday following is going to be the day you bring the Omer. The Baitusim obviously got a strong position religiously, politically, obviously, because we are going through this entire procedure and this entire production in order to reject the Baitusim. It must mean that the Baitusim was a group of people who had a serious foothold in the religious and political life of the Jewish people. Has to have been. And so a major production was made in order to show the Baitusim that they are not correct. This is but one example where we see this, a major production that's done in order to lahotzi milibam shel tzedukim. In this case, Baitusim. But both of these groups, actually, we're going to be referencing both of the groups over the course of this morning's daf. Just to simply, be a refutation of their position. Tana Rabbanan. We start with the Gemara, and the Gemara over here, we are now going to go into Megillas Tanis. Okay, Megillas Tanis, remember, during Bayesheni, and even pre-Bayesheni, but during Bayesheni, so there were a number of struggles. It was historically a very difficult time, as was a lot of Jewish history. And during Bayesheni, so during various struggles and during various various Yeshuas that we experienced, so a lot of those days turned into days which were like quasi-yontifs. Quasi-yontifs, and some of them, so you couldn't fast. Now, nowadays, it's hard to imagine, meaning we, you know, from our perspective, like those days which we do fast, we're not looking forward to it. It's hard to fast. Back in the day, fasting which was done much more regularly, and in terms of when a day comes up in Megillas Tanis, which was a happy day, so you weren't allowed to fast on that day, even if you had, let's say, a good reason why you should be fasting. But these are days that were earmarked not to fast. Some of the days that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis are such festive days that not only was there an Isser on Tanis, but there was also an Isser on the Hesped. You couldn't eulogize. So Rachmanis, you lost somebody on that day, and you're doing a Kvura, so no eulogy. Because the day was a quasi-yantif. And depending on the kind of Yeshua that it was, if it was a minor Yeshua, so then an Isser Tanis. If it was a major Yeshua, so there'd even be an Isser Hesped. I know, like, I kind of think the other way. Like, in other words, I think, you know, like an Isser Tanis would be even greater. But that's not how it works. The Isser Tanis was for a minor festive day, and for something a little bit bigger, Isser Hesped. Good. And so, where's Megillas Tanis? We have it. Do we follow it? No, we don't follow it nowadays. But the Megillas Tanis. So you see the Gemara in Tanis that discusses this extensively in terms of the fact that it no longer, these days are no longer considered binding. We no longer bound by Megillas Tanis, with two notable exceptions, by the way, Purim and Chanukah. But, okay. Outside of those days, the rest of Megillas Tanis, so we're not familiar, I mean, I'll speak for myself. I'm not familiar with it, meaning I don't know all the days that are recorded there. And on top of that, it's no longer binding. Tanu Rabbanan. Alan Yomen de Lolis Ana Bahon. So Megillas Tanis, by the way, it's written in Aramaic. Okay. So these days, de Lolis Ana Bahon. Umiksasan de Lola Misbed Bahon. So for these days, so anything recorded in Megillas Tanis, you don't fast on these days. And for some of them, because it's a greater Yeshua, you don't even eulogize on these days. And so, why are we calling Megillas Tanis? You'll see. Meresh Yerucha Denisa Natamya Beitukam Temida. So from Rosh Chodesh Nisan until the eighth day of Nisan. So what happened? We reinstated the Karban Tamid. So as a result, and more details to follow in just a moment. So in other words, those days now are earmarked as festive days. You can fast from Rosh Chodesh Nisan all the way to the eighth of Nisan. Itukam Tamida Delo Limisbad. Umitam Yabei Va'at Sof Mo'ada. Isusav Chaga de Shvuasa. Sorry, but by the way, let me just go back, make a small correction. These days were so festive that you couldn't even eulogize on these days from 1 through 8 of Nisan. Now, Omitamya Beva at Sof Moada, now from day 8 until the end of Pesach, right, the 21st day of Nisan, right, I'm speaking like I'm an Eretz Yisrael. So, Isusav Chaga de Shvuaya. So, now we have in our Gemara the words Lo Lemispeid, but with a correction over here, it's Lolis Ana. So the Shita makes a correction. Seemingly Rashi also makes a correction as well. So in other words, from day 8 of Nisan until the 21st of Nisan, so no, just no fasting. Now obviously many of those days are actually Yontif itself. So in other words, those days exist in of themselves. Okay, not for now. But in other words, just for us to know, from day 8 until day 21 were also quasi-festive days, not as festive, because it's only an Isser of Tanis, not an Isser of Hesped. And that has to do with of Shavuos. Again, more details to follow. Now, with the Bryce itself gives us a little bit more details. Meaning from day 1 through day 8, so these are days which are really festive, and because along comes the Tzedukim, and they say, Yachim is not Devim Umevi Tamid. That an individual can come and bring the Karban Tamid. Meaning, the Tzedukim were of the opinion that a Karban Tamid can be brought from private money, from private funds. Now, that is incorrect, patently incorrect. But they not only make that argument, but they also bolster their argument by citing a pasuk in the Torah. My drosh, esakefes echad taseh baboker, esakefes echini taseh bein ha'arbayim. Now, state in the pasuk clearly, taseh. What does the word taseh mean? Individually, you bring the carbon tamid. So they seemingly have a really strong raya that an individual could bring the carbon tamid. So, Maya Hadru, now our counter response, now our first counter response is that's not our Mesorah. But in other words, even from a Psukim standpoint, we say, Es Karbani Lachmi Lishai Tishmeru. The word Tishmeru, that's Lashon Rabim. She Kulan Ban Mechuma Salishka, meaning it's not private money, it's public money. Now, Rashi over here makes the observation, their position, although indefensible, because it's not the Mesorah, but still, they did have a good Pasuk to prove their point. And so, when we finally were able to overrule their argument, so it turned into a day of real festivity. Because their position, again, it's indefensible, but they did have a Pasuk. So our overruling of their position turned into a day of major festivity, which is why, from 1 through 8 of Nisan, no fasting and no eulogy. Now, let's go to the part of the Braisa that is going to be relevant to us. Mitamanya bei va'ad sof moada isusif chaga deshvasa dolo misbod. And again, with a small correction over here of the lowest ana. Sha baitusim omer. So now the counterparts of the tzedukim, the baitusim. So they were of the position at Sarasach Achar Shabbos. Achar Shabbos. Because they consistently argue that when is Shavuos, Shavuos is going to be on a Sunday. Why? Because go back 50 days earlier. Because the Omer is going to be brought on a Sunday, and it's only going to be brought on a Sunday, and we don't care when Pesach rolls around. Now, Nitapalem Rav Yochem and Zakkai. Now, Rav Yochem and Zakkai now is arguing. Now, just right, I'm just trying to pinpoint us historically. Rav Yochem and Zakkai lived at the end of Bayisheni. So over here, we are now dealing with Baitusim already at the end of Bayisheni. Right? Rav Yochem and Zakkai was one of the heroes of Bayisheni, and salvaged the Jewish people. See the Gemara in Gittin for more on that. But in the meantime, however, Va'amar Lahem Shotim. And so now Rav Yochem and Zakkai really takes it up with the Baitusim over their position. Now, obviously, by the way, this must be before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, meaning because we're arguing in terms of when the Omer is being brought. Even if it's post by Sheni, still, in other words, it's going to be a function of when Shavuos is going to be observed. Okay. Minayin lachem. So Rabbi Yochem and Zakkai speaks now really strongly to the Baitusim, and he says, where do you get this from? In other words, basically, it's nonsense. But obviously, they've been holding this, and again, they are people who obviously had some sort of clout. So none of them had the audacity, and then the Gemara says that's not true. One of them had enough chutzpah where actually contended with Rav Yochem and Zakkai. V'amar Moshe Rabbeinu of Yisrael hayav yodesh etzoros yom echad hu. Amar v'tikna echad, I'm sorry, achar Shabbos k'deshu Yisrael mit angim shnei yamim. So this particular baitus said to Rav Yochem and Zakkai, you know Moshe Rabbeinu, you know he loved us. He loved us. And so, right, you see this on the secular calendar. Like Memorial Day is not a Tuesday, it's not a Wednesday, it's a Monday. A three-day weekend. And so Moshe Rabbeinu, right, we in America are not the first ones who thought of this. So the Baitus made the same accusation about Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, you think you want Shavuos in the middle of the week? Moshe didn't want that. He didn't want that for us. He wanted Shavuos to be Sunday, so we'll have Shabbos, we'll have Sunday, and we'll relax for 2 days. Two-day weekend. What do you mean it's not a Moshe issue? He's arguing, the Baitus is arguing, is that Moshe wrote the Torah. Right. It's not divine, as the Baitus is arguing. And Moshe decided when it was going to be. Okay. So, Kadesh Yisrael mit Angin Shnei Yamim, Kara Allah Mikrazeh. So now, Rav Yochem and Zakkai answers the Baitus, and as Rashi is going to tell us on the top of the next Amud, in other words, he's not going to give him a serious answer. In other words, when you're hearing arguments like this, so sometimes a serious answer is not the best answer. So, Kara Alav Mikra Zeh, Achadas Yom Icharev Derech Har Seir, 11 days, the beginning of Parshas Devarim. The Imoshes, we turn now to the top of Samachem and Aleph, sorry, Samachamid Beis. The Moshe Rabbeinu of Yisrael Hayalama Ichram Bemidbar Arbem Shana. You know, from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael, it's an 11-day walk. That's all it is. And meanwhile, Moshe loves us so much. Really. Okay, 40 years. Okay, takes 11 days. And meanwhile, he took us on a 40-year detour. And again, to quote Rashi, it's not a serious answer. Right? I'll read the Rashi inside. V'dichui ba'ama kamerle, mishum duhu aya omer divrei hevel. So the Baitus is talking nonsense to Rav Yochanan Zakkai, so a little bit of nonsense deserves a little bit of nonsense. Amalo Rebbe bekacha tapotrani. So now the Baitus knows that he's being played with. And he says, Rav Yochanan Zakkai, please, I deserve more. So the Amalo Shota. So Rav Yochanan Zakkai puts the man in his place, starts off with, you're a fool. Velote Torah Shlema Shalanu Kisicha Betela Shalachem. So let not our Torah be your conversation. However you discuss other matters in and outside of the house, that's not the Torah, and don't treat the Torah that way. So Kasev Echad Amar Tisperu Chamishim Yom VeKasev Echad Amar Sheva Shabbosos Tamimos Tiena. But Rav Yochanan Mizaki gives him a serious answer, and he says, look, in terms of when Shavuos is, so there's a little bit of confusion from the Torah. On one hand, the Torah says Sheva Shabbosos Tamimos, so that's 7 weeks. That's 49 days. On the other hand, the Torah also says Chamishim Yom, 50 days. Well, which one is it? So Ketzad Kan B'Yomtov Shechalios B'Shabbos Kan B'Yomtov Shechalios B'Emtza Shabbos. And what we have right now is proof number one, meaning how do I know that Shavuos is not going to be contingent on a day of the week? The way Rashi understands it, it goes like this: one pasuk when it says Sheva Shabbosos Tamimos, that means what's the Shabbos? A Shabbos is a week. Sheva Shabbosos Tamimos means 7 weeks. Meaning, generally speaking, when does a week begin? Just like this morning, Sunday morning. A week begins on a Sunday and ends on a Shabbos. So when the Torah says Sheva Shabbosos Tamimos, so that means that it's possible that you're going to be counting 7 weeks, meaning seven Sunday through Shabboses. And then after you count that, so then it's going to be that Shavuos will land on a Sunday. But that's only if Pesach falls out on a Shabbos, and then we're going to start counting on a Sunday. So the first pasuk of Sheva Shabbosos Tamimos, that's going to be describing a year in which Pesach is on a Shabbos and the first day of counting is on a Sunday. But then the Torah also says Chamishim Yom. Why does the Torah say Chamishim Yom? Because it's not always going to be that Pesach is going to end up on a Shabbos. There are six other days in which Pesach can fall out on. Again, before the calendar is fixed. So there are six other days that Pesach can fall out on. And if Pesach were to fall out on any of those other days, so how do I count? Chamishim Yom. Meaning the Chamishim Yom is there to tell me that I start counting then the day after Pesach. If Pesach falls out on a Monday, so that, poor example, but if Pesach falls out on a Monday, so then we'll start counting on a Tuesday and Chamishim Yom. And Shavuos will be now on day 50. So that, says Rav Yochanan Zakkai, is a raya in the Torah that the counting of the Omer is not on Sunday. It could be on Sunday, but not limited to Sunday. We'll stop over here, and tomorrow when we pick it up, we're going to go over four other rayas of the Gemara in terms of how we know that the counting of the Omer is always going to be the day after Pesach.